Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Thanks for joining us for the conversation on this Aloha Friday, October 18th. Today we honoho some recent conversations that we've had meant to engage the whole ohana, stories for and about our families. Pack your lunchbox, we're going on a field trip. We spotlight an online hub for keiki to learn about our native manu in this, the year of the forest birds. We meet a mother and daughter who overcame their struggles to open a popular Turkish restaurant, and we talk to an illustrator who created art for a family-friendly joke book. Try not to laugh. Plus, a son follows in his father's footsteps to become a sommelier. Stay tuned for our Hanaho Ohana Show. You're tuned to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. We are revisiting stories for the whole family throughout today's Hanaho Show. First up, we're taking a virtual field trip to an educational hub all about our forest birds. Josh Atwood is an education specialist at the Department of Land and Natural Resources. We spoke to him back in April about the educational material available online. There, Keiki can explore the Keoho Bird Conservation Center in Kau without ever having to leave their couch, all through the magic of 360-degree photo and video. Here's Atwood.
So we're celebrating forest birds all year long. Listeners of the Manu Minute might know that there are about 84 species of forest bird that were known to occur in Hawaii, and of those, 58 are already extinct, and we'll never hear them again. So of the remaining birds, a lot of them have classifications about being, you know, critically endangered or at risk. And so we are celebrating the birds that help make Hawaii special. And all year long, we are having events that people can go to. We've developed some new educational materials, and we created a web hub where all of the partners that care about birds in Hawaii, we have kind of consolidated their resources. So somebody who wants to celebrate birds this year just goes to this webpage, it's dlnr.hawaii.gov/manu, and they can find curricula, lesson plans, activities for students, and the new one that we released this week is a virtual field trip for Keoho Bird Conservation Center on Hawaii Island.
When you say virtual field trip, then you don't have to fly to the Big Island, but you can still get the experience of what it's like.
Exactly, yeah. So it's 360-degree imagery that we take with a special camera. And then within these spherical photos that you can look around in any direction, we have hotspots that users can click on to play videos where we interview experts that talk about working with the birds at this care facility. You can click on hotspots to learn more about specific bird species or what they eat. And you can hear audio of the birds in that center. And some of the video we took, we also took in a 360-degree format. So as you're moving through the stops on this virtual field trip, you're learning about what the scientists at this center do to care for these birds that are at the center, you know, veterinarian practices and raising food for the birds that are in their care. But then you actually go into the aviaries of these rare birds. And this is not something you could do for an in-person field trip. Even the students that are lucky enough to be on Hawaii Island and might get to go to Keoho Bird Conservation Center in person, you can't take a whole classroom into an aviary for a critically endangered bird, of which there's only a handful left in the wild. And so our virtual field trip is really the only way to kind of experience what it's like for these birds that are temporarily in care, and then will hopefully be re-released back into the forest later.
So you really want to get the word out to the teachers, because if they've got curriculum that they're planning and they can use this as a resource, it's there.
Absolutely. Yeah, the field trips are open to everybody. We do make them with students in mind. So we're working with the Department of Education and trying to align our field trips with academic standards, particularly the next generation science standards. And so they are ideal for classrooms to take as a group or for students to explore on their own. But you don't have to be a student, K through 12. Any age person can go on our website and take this virtual field trip.
So do you have a favorite bird?
I do. My favorite bird, it's hard to choose, but I'd have to go with the akoekoe. It's a critically endangered bird on Maui, and it's also called the crested honeycreeper. And if you see a photo of this bird, it's just incredible. It has this amazing, like, almost hairstyle on top of its head with white and red and orange feathers on top of a black purple body. It's wild. It's a beautiful, unique bird.
Well, I'm partial to the Manoku, and it's all white, but
yes.
Yeah, we see a lot of them flying around our studio here, and so, yeah, I'm kind of partial to them. And they've got a festival coming up later this month.
That's right, and we'll be there. So we're actually at a number of events this month. April is Earth Month. And so Forestry and Wildlife and a lot of our partners that care about birds in Hawaii will be at the Party for the Planet at Honolulu Zoo on April 13th. We'll be at the Bishop Museum Science and Sustainability Festival on April 20th, and then we'll be at the Manu'oku Festival on April 27th.
And so while this round of virtual field trips focuses on birds because it's a year of the bird, we do have some available for snails as well.
Yes, yeah. So last year was year of the kahuli, and this year's year of the forest bird. Last year, we created a virtual field trip that you can still find online that goes through the Snail Extinction Prevention Laboratory. And you can see how the scientists there that work for DLNR are caring for these snail species that many of them no longer exist in the wild. They're similar to the birds. They have to be brought into a care facility to prevent them from going extinct. We care for them in those facilities while we work to improve their habitats with the aim of returning them to the landscape once the habitat is safe for them.
And we should mention that the field trip experience is available on virtual reality platform as well?
Yes. So all of our field trips you can view in a web browser, on a computer, tablet, even a smartphone, but they're also VR enabled, meaning that if you have a VR headset or even just a Google Cardboard slot that you put your phone in, you can enter VR mode and you can put it on your face and look around in 360 degrees and feel like you're really there, you know, with the birds in the aviary or in the snail lab. We have field trips to natural area reserves around the state, different locations where you can, if you can't be there in person, the next best thing is to experience it virtually.
I mean, I bet you that is just going to grab the kids. I mean, you know, with technology the way it is, to be able to put on those glasses, right?
Yeah, we've had some good success. We've only been promoting this program with virtual field trips for a little over a year, and we have about 87,000 page views, I believe, across our different virtual field trips. That's each stop within a field trip counts as a page view. And when we go to fairs and festivals, that's when we'll usually bring a virtual reality headset. And we usually have a line, you know, away from our booth of kids just waiting to try this out and see what it's like to be transported to a mountaintop where a lot of our native species are found. Unfortunately, in Hawaii, most of our native species are up Mauka and everybody lives down at lower elevations. So this is a way we can bring nature to them.
We've seen photos of, you know, the scientists out there, you know, atop a cliff, you know, on Kauai, fertilizing a endangered plant. But yeah, this is a way for you to travel there.
Yes, without having to rappel yourself and be on the side of a cliff. It's much safer.
Yeah, particularly if you're afraid of heights like I am. So, well, so then folks can have that opportunity to experience this at any of those events, or they can go online. And if teachers want to know more, they can just go to your website or what, call you? I mean, I don't know if you do anything else, anything special?
Yes, yeah, we have an educator email list that teachers can sign up for in Hawaii. And as I mentioned, we are working with Department of Education to try to get some of these resources directly to teachers, along with standards, documents, and other things to facilitate their use in the classroom. But any user can go to our website and find these virtual field trips, as well as all the other activities, downloadable crafts and games that we have for Year of the Forest Birds, Makiiki Ona Manu Nehele. And we also are offering swag, so people can email us for free water bottle stickers that feature our native birds. You can get a free classroom poster that features some of our endangered forest birds. We just want to get these resources into the hands of teachers and students and anybody else that loves these birds.
Okay, and then you've got, what, half a dozen on the line on the birds right now?
We have half a dozen virtual field trips that are in this 360-degree platform. And we have some older field trips as well that are made with Google Earth, but our new 360 platform, Kula, we have six field trips online for different public lands around the state that you might not be able to get to in person. And so this is a way that we can share those resources with people. And we'll be expanding that over the years as we do additional outreach programs and we can get to additional places that we want to share with people. These are all public resources, and we just want to make sure that people have access to them and can understand why they're so special.
And then if there's anybody out there that wants to be like a sponsor of this program, I mean, is there any of that available?
Yeah, you know, we're a state program, and so we're already sponsored by the people of Hawaii, so mahalo. But on our Makihiki o na Manuna Hele webpage, we have options where people can buy merchandise or donate to support some of our non-state partners or RCUH programs like the Kauai Forest Bird Recovery Project or the Maui Forest Bird Recovery Project or Bishop Museum. So there are definitely ways that people can get involved either through volunteering or through getting, you know, items or donating.
Okay. All right. Well, you're the bird. Happy to help out in any way to get the word out.
Mahalo.
That was Josh Atwood, education specialist with the Department of Land and Natural Resources. We will have links to the virtual field trip on DLNR's Educational Hub on our website after the show. Just in time for Mother's Day this past May, we sat down with the mother-daughter team of Neely Yadirim and Ahu Hetema. They're owners of Istanbul Restaurant, and they share the title of executive chef. Their story is a heartwarming one. When Ahu was a college student in Hawaii, she spent years fighting deportation while she sorted out her immigration status. Neely saw the emotional toll these struggles were taking on her daughter, so she flew from Turkey to Hawaii with the spices that she needed to cook Ahu's favorite meals. And they've been cooking alongside each other ever since. The Conversations Russell Subiono got the chance to sit down with them in our studio.
I came here as a student, and I was very happy to be here as a student. I went to two different universities, and I was studying art and psychology. My whole point was becoming a psychologist or psychiatrist in art. My goal was to heal people through art. Yes, during that time, I had some serious immigration problems happen. I even received letters like, leave the country in 30 days or we come and get you out, you know. And that was very stressful, but I was very fortunate to be always surrounded with good people. And one of those good people was my attorney, and he said, they don't have that right. They're just trying to scare you off. And this is gonna take us some time for us to clear everything out. But I didn't know that time was gonna be about 11, 12 years.
Right.
It was very disheartening and depressing, and it brought me anxiety, bit PTSD. And at that time, when I was having a lot of medication, my mom came to my life. She said, basically, this is not the way of living. You're so young, so much life ahead of you, you know? And I remember the first thing she brought, a luggage of spices and desserts, that all those things I love from Turkey. And I called that moment, like, my life was very cloudy and gray, and her presence just started to make things a bit more colorful. That was the first thing, and she brought all those spices, and instead of cooking with the spices, I actually started painting with the spices. And then, you know, she kind of pushed me, and we started cooking together. And I didn't know I really enjoy cooking before like that. And I think it brought a lot of happy memories that reminded me the time I was in the kitchen with my mom, and just my happy time. And it kind of establish a bridge between me and my culture and my happy memories.
And I wanted to ask your mom, Neely, what did you cook for her that helped her through that hard time?
Soup, lentil soup.
Lentil soup?
Yeah, my favorite.
She talked a lot about her happy memories. What are some of the dishes that she enjoyed growing up that you made?
Şimdi baharatlarım yemek.
He says, as much as my food, also my love that I integrated into food, I believe, helped my daughter to came out of from that time frame. And the food that she loved the most is kolmantı, dolma, kısır, içli köfte, my lentil soup, desserts, all those spices, the scent of spices, künefe, all those things we start cooking together, start to change her mood and elevate her mindset.
And so when you came to visit Ahu and you were cooking for her, at some point in there, the two of you realized that Hawaii was missing out on Mediterranean food and Middle East food. What's the story behind the decision to open a restaurant pretty much on the other side of the world from Turkey?
This is a funny story because this wasn't an idea at all. And we were cooking so much because it was making me feel good. And we were having a really good time in the kitchen. And I think we were cooking more than what we can eat. And we started to give the food to our neighbors. We started to share with the neighbors. And our neighbors were surprised because I don't think that is common here. Like back home, if we cook a lot, we always share with our neighbors. But I don't think that's happening much in US. And one of our neighbors told us, this is incredible. Like, I cannot believe you guys are giving us this much food. She said, no, we have to start paying for this. I said, we don't wanna, we just wanna give it to you, you know? And she said, you guys gotta go at least like try this at the farmer's market. Like, just go, just give this food out at the farmer's market and you will be surprised how much people will love this and how many people will come back to it. And that's when I applied for the farmer's market, and Hawaii Farm Bureau Farmer's Market accepted us to participate. And we were very happy. We just started. And that is when like we realized a few months later, 1 tent turned into 2 tent turned into 3 tent turned into 4. We start to get team members. We were like, this is a business now.
Right.
This is not fun as much anymore. This is a whole level of doing something else. And that is when I wanted to take the next step, opening a restaurant. And that's what we did. And I didn't study business, but I think, you know, in life, just like cooking, if one wanna learn anything, do you learn anything? Mm-hmm. If you have a will, you will do it. That's kind of what I experienced. Despite of all the circumstances, you do forge your own fate. You know, you do forge your own life, even though you may not be in a good place at that time. You just gotta keep going forward. And I had a lot of blocks in my life, you know, that were preventing me go move forward. But just waking up every day and pushing it and moving it, this is how we get here. It is 100% owned by me and my mother.
Yeah.
And nobody helped us at the beginning. The only help we got was from a couple places. One was Small Business Administration through Hawaii National Bank, and other help, it was our miracle. There is a beautiful foundation, nonprofit called Feed the Hunger Foundation. Okay. And they found us at the farmer's market and they offered me if I need any help for what I am doing is so great. Mm-hmm. And they are there to help me and they did help me.
I did want to ask your mom, had you ever worked in a restaurant before? How excited were you when Ahu talked to you about opening a restaurant here?
Ben daha önce hiç çalışmadım restoranda. Evet.
She was very surprised how far we take from one thing and how far we get there. She wasn't expecting this and she feels she's very blessed. She's proud of me and she knows it was mainly her dream to have her own restaurant someday, even though she never worked in a restaurant before. She wanted to cook for people. That was her ultimate dream. And now she's living the dream and she's very happy.
Her şeyi yapacağımdan çok
I know I would do anything I could for my daughter. Yapacağım. So it just was a natural effort to help her.
When you created the restaurant, how did you guys figure out who would have what role?
Sure. Because we are mother and daughter, we didn't really care about much about like who's going to do that, what's going to do that. Everything really developed organically. And she decided to more like be in charge of the authentic recipes. The recipes, you cannot Google it, you cannot find it. Just because those recipes belongs to my background, my family, where I come from, the region I grew up. And she was the main source of those recipes. And I was the artist in the equation, like I designed the whole place. And I told my mom, I want to make this place look like a modern Turkish home. I was fortunate because my dad is so resourceful. He's an engineer, he's an electrician. My husband is a marine engineer. So he quit from his job, and him and my dad actually built my place. So everything didn't happen just all happy and easy.
Yeah.
Things happen quite difficult and interesting at times and miraculously at times. But things really worked out. The moment we opened the door, there is still so much support, so much love. We truly feel Hawaii enriched our lives so much with me and my family. I was in a very dark place, and I am on the rainbow right now.
I did want to ask your mom real quick. You're the executive chef of the restaurant. Does that mean that you're the boss of everything that goes on in the kitchen? Is that your space? You make the rules?
Yes. And eski bildiğim öğrendi bildiğim her şeyi yapıyorum yani kimseden almadım kendi.
Yes, she is the boss in the kitchen, absolutely. but she's not. You cannot really name her the boss. I will call her. She's the mother.
Oh, okay.
Yes. She is the mother in the kitchen. She's. Yeah. We have a lot of young people.
Herkes mama diyor bana.
Yes, they don't call her chef in the kitchen. They actually call me chef in the restaurant, but they call her mom. And we didn't teach them to call her mom. It just organically became like that. We have a lot of young people working for us, and most of them are immigrants like us. And they all started with us as a dishwasher. And now my mom made them master grill, pastry chef, pantry chef. She really taught them how to be leader. Yeah, she's definitely in charge of that.
What's your favorite thing about working with each other?
I think we don't need to talk. We both know what we need to do. There is this spiritual relationship that you cannot develop that unless you have such unconditional love between you and the person. Because we feel each other. And to me, that space is my mother. And my goal is how I can make this better, not because I am earning anything out of it or I'm doing something to earn awards or any. I don't have any type of approval or expectation when I go to work. I just want to make it better for my mom. And I think she feels the same way. Just organically, everything is very beautiful. I would call it just one word, just beautiful. Working with each other is beautiful.
Onun varlığı, sevgim çok.
She says her existence, just she's being next to me. And she's not just my daughter, she's my best friend. She's my companion of life. She's my all. And having her next to me is just blessing.
Ahu, Neely, thank you so much for coming to the station today. I really enjoyed talking to you.
We really enjoyed talking to you as well. Thank you, Russell.
Thank you so much for your time.
That was the mother-daughter team of Neely Yadirim and Ahu Hetema talking with HBR's Russell Subiano. They're the owners and executive chefs of Istanbul Restaurant here on Oahu. Their restaurant was recently honored with multiple Haleaina Awards, including Best Mediterranean Restaurant. We will return with our Ohana Hanaho show after this break.
The news and music you hear on HPR are supported in part by nearly 200 local organizations that choose to reinforce their brand with us. Mahalo to Castle & Cook Homes Hawaii, Coral Ridge, Adaptations Dance Theater, and to VertiCount. They believe, just as you do, in the power of public radio. See a full list of our underwriters at hawaiipublicradio.org. Even when your days shift and change, some things don't, like HPR keeping you informed with news you can trust and providing an oasis of music when you need it. So stick with your routine and stay connected at home. Listen to HPR on air, online, or on your smart speaker. Whether you're working in your street clothes or in your pajamas, HPR is here for you. Just ask your smart speaker to play Hawaii Public Radio.
Welcome back to our Ohana Hanaho show this Friday on The Conversation. Draw what you know has been the mantra of artist John J. Murakami for more than three decades, from local kind greeting cards to L&L's Hawaiian barbecue cookbook. And don't forget about the Gecko series. Murakami's talent is blending illustrations with a hefty dose of local humor. He recently released a new book entitled Hawaii's Joke Book for Kids. Murakami spoke with The Conversation's Lillian Song back in July about his career and about illustrating for local audiences.
I grew up reading comic strips. I loved the Sunday funnies. Even for like comic books, I would actually get a whole bunch of comic books from my parents who actually worked at a bus company, and kids would leave their comics on the bus and they would bring it home. And there would be a stack of stuff. And unfortunately, like, most kids my age, you know, they were into like the superhero stuff. They were into like Batman and Spider-Man and all that. I actually went for the funny book stuff. I actually liked Richie Rich and Archie's and all the other fun stuff because they weren't episodic. They weren't like cliffhangers. So I could read them. And I always loved humor and comedy because I also like watching a lot of cartoons on TV. So Looney Tunes, Tex Avery, all those kind of cartoons I just loved because they were just one-liners and they were, I just ate all that up.
Right. So this was feeding into your psyche, into for you as a child developing, though. I was reading that a good sense of humor is a tool that helps children. It engages in play. It also fosters creativity and a different way of thinking.
My parents were always very, very supportive. I'm sure, like, you know, back then when you have your kid decide, like, I want to go into art. And, you know, back then in the 70s and 80s, you're like, well, I don't know. That's a really lucrative career.
You sure don't want to be an accountant.
Exactly. You know, realistically, they wanted me to be like a physician or pharmacist or something, you know, but they were always very supportive of me. And I also have two older sisters, and we always like joked around with each other, and they collected a lot of other comics and things like that. So my oldest sister used to actually draw like her own little comics, and that kind of inspired me as well. Mm. My second sister, we just had the same sense of humor. So we liked the same TV shows. You know, we liked a lot of the goofy movies and things like that. All of these things actually factored into like helping me who I am today.
Also recognize your work in one of the recent books L&L's Eddie Flores put out, the Hawaiian Barbecue Cookbook.
Yes.
And your name was there as illustrator.
Yeah. So I've been working with L&L for a while. I was doing their calendars and I was doing a lot of their shirts. So like it was like a year of the dog or something like that. And they called me back for kind of a lot of work. And then Eddie threw this idea like, oh, I want to do a cookbook. So I thought it was just going to be spot illustrations, you know, like maybe one every 10 pages. But it came to this point where like every other page was a cartoon. And it was a lot of work, but it was fun. Oh, and disclaimer, anyone who has the book, I did not come up with any of the jokes. Those are all Eddie's jokes, okay?
You're just the illustrator.
I'm just the artist, that's it. Fair so enough. Don't blame me.
Your talent has allowed you to work with people from different walks of life. For us on The Conversation, we've had Yeonji Denise on the show as she's been guest hosting. And when she heard that you were going to be coming to the station, she was like, I love John. She's a parent. And so for her, she resonates with your Gecko series that you worked with Jane Gillespie on.
Yeah, the Geckos were such great characters. And I would love to do like a whole bunch more with them. Unfortunately, I think for printing wise, for children's books, they've really cut back on that. Like ever since I think Borders closed down, because there's not that many places to sell these local things anymore. You know, you have Barnes & Noble, but we have one Barnes & Noble here, right? There's a few other shops here, but there's not as much as like how before. I think there was like 9 Borders and, you know, other shops as well. And I'm sure the pandemic didn't help either.
Right. So the local publication landscape is changing with the times, but you definitely are a popular draw.
And personally, myself, though, I always enjoy going down the greeting card aisle to look for your local kind cards.
Oh, fun. This was like right after I graduated and I worked in the library for a little while. And they asked me if I wanted to actually take a test to become a librarian full time. And I said, no, if I did that, then I may as well just give up being an artist because I'm not going to have time. So that was kind of like a stepping decision in my life where I had to step off and then figure out like, well, what I'm going to do. So during that time, a gentleman, Pauly Sono, who actually, I believe he was ASUH president or something like that. He was doing UH graphics at the time. And he knew of my work too. And so he and his girlfriend at the time, Gail Machida, said, well, we're interested in doing this company. We're thinking about doing these greeting cards because he looked on the rack and he says, well, he sees a lot of the local stuff, but they were pretty much just like photos and or they were blank inside. But he wanted something funny. You know, they both actually decided this. They wanted something like more like a shoebox greeting, you know, with the angry lady and stuff like that. So we decided to call it Miley Way Products because we actually met on that road in UH. We had no idea how to even approach this. So fortunately, like I said, Gail and Paul did all the research. And back then it was Daye. After Holiday Mart, it was Daye.
Now Don Quixote.
Now Don Quixote. But they turned us down. And it's funny because Gail used to work there part-time. And they said, no, we can't accept this. So then we approached Long's and Long's picked us up. But what we didn't realize was each Long's has a different buyer. So they actually had to approach all, I forgot, what was it, 30-something different Long's.
You know, they were committed.
Yeah, they were very committed. And that was actually like about 27 years ago. And we're still doing it.
Yeah. You are a freelance artist known for depicting various ethnicities, characters. You've got such a way with the localness, that flow, that feel.
Oh, so thank you. Yeah.
Fast forward, now we're in 2024. You have, through Beach House Publishing, released a new title.
Yes. The Hawaii Joke Book for Kids. Yeah.
Thumbing through this, it's an easy read, and it also is helped along, though, by your very funny illustrations.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Do you have any favorite jokes from this book?
Oh, gosh. So Jane pitched it to me, and she said, oh, we're thinking about doing a local joke book, and we wanted to have your illustrations do maybe like, you know, 40 or 50 comics. And I said, okay, that's fine. So when she sent me the text, it was like 40 pages of just jokes, and she says, like, yeah, just pick whatever. So then I was kind of doing like every other. I was just doing like some sketches. And then she says like, well, that's too many. And I was like, oh, yeah, actually, yeah, that would be like 300 sketches. So I said, I'll take every other eighth one and then we'll go from there. And then some, like if I couldn't think of anything, then I would go before or after. But no, it came out pretty good. And same thing. She just kind of pretty much let me go and do anything. So what am I looking at? It's like, what does a mermaid use to call her friends? A shell phone.
How about a knock-knock joke? Any favorite knock-knocks?
Yeah, knock-knock.
Who's there?
Chi.
Chi who?
Chi who? I hurt myself doing that.
Very local. No, but see, once again, I think like these kind of products really help, you know, put us into our sense of who we are.
I think so. Kids love to tell like jokes, and I've had nephews and nieces who are like that. You know, you entertain them, you know? It's fun. And there's a few that I was like, I didn't know if it would translate because some are more verbal. There's one where it's like, what do you call a fish with no eyes?
What do you call a fish with no eyes?
See, there you go. See, I don't know if that translated well or not, but
letter eyes.
Letter eyes.
Thank you.
Well, what's interesting too, I do a lot of puns. I actually do a lot of cartoons that deal with puns. People like that on social media. So I did a career day talk, and I was showing some of my gags and everything. Oh, so the gag was this: they're at a karaoke room, and the uncle is looking through the book, and he's like, "Oh, what's the name of that real famous Disney song? The one about how about Hawaii? The one from Lilo and Stitch? No. Get the one with the turtle." It's like, oh, from Finding Nemo? No. It's the one that goes, a whole new world. Like whole new. Like, and then the kids are kind of like, oh. So I showed that to the kids at this one class. And one raises her hand and she's like, are all your jokes dad jokes? And so I'm like, I didn't know what to say to that. I was like, yes, they are. This is what sells.
Well, you understand your audience. What was it you were saying that Dave Thorne told you?
Dave Thorne, who was my mentor, one of the things I really remember him telling me was like, draw what you know. And early on growing up, you know, I think most artists go through this. We are inspired by what we see. And so for us growing up, we saw a lot of comics like Spider-Man, which didn't take place in Hawaii. A lot of the Marvel stuff was in New York. because they were based out of New York. And so like even like anime, you know, a lot of stuff is in Japan. And things like that. So a lot of upcoming kids now are so fascinated with like, they think that it has to be in Japan or New York or any other place. But I had another friend, Phil Ye, and he's also another mentor of mine. He told me too, it's like, why doesn't anyone draw anything about Hawaii? And you know, it's like a light bulb just went out. It's like, you know what? You're right. We should just draw what we know. And that's what I know is Hawaii. Basically, I think like for any other upcoming artist, just keep going, keep practicing every day, you know, try not to get frustrated too much. The important thing is have fun. Have fun with doing it. As long as you're having fun, no matter what it is, you'll enjoy it and you'll keep doing it.
That was artist John J. Murakami talking with HPR's Lillian Song. He'll have a table at the amazing Comic-Con this November, which will be held at the Hawaii Convention Center. On Father's Day this past June, some might have celebrated with a special dinner. Chuck and Cully Furuya did, in a way. They were working the dinner service at Mara, a Mediterranean restaurant across from the Ala Moana Shopping Center. Chuck was Hawaii's first master sommelier and the 10th person in the entire nation to reach the rank of master sommelier. Cully is now following in his father's footsteps as the in-house sommelier at Mara. The Furuyas spoke with The Conversation's Maddie Bender about their collaboration and careers in wine.
Traditionally, Father's Day isn't the biggest restaurant holiday, right, Dad?
Right.
So our team at Mara wants to make it a holiday. I've never really worked the floor with him that much, and working the floor with your dad on Father's Day is a pretty special experience, you know?
Well, I mean, and vice versa. For me, you know, he's my son. And so to see him come out of this cocoon and transform into this butterfly, kind of this other being, and specifically professionally, but also personally, you know, that's quite a special occasion for me. And it's a perfect Father's Day gift.
So it's four courses, four wines. Our chef team at Mara is really, really easy to work with. And they really wanted to do this crudo dish as their first course. So it was a Kona Konpachi crudo. And the preparation for it calls for an off-dry German Riesling. And even though Mara is Mediterranean, and German Riesling isn't necessarily, it's not a Mediterranean style wine at all. He collaborates with one of his favorite winemakers out of Germany to make a off-dry German Riesling called CF Eurasian Riesling. And that was the first wine for the first course, like in homage to him for Father's Day, to just showcase part of his life's work. So that was pretty cool.
The thing, what he wrote about it was when he said it was an homage to his father, I was like, whoa, that's pretty awesome. And also the other thing that it signaled for me is that Mara is distinctly and wholeheartedly Mediterranean. To then all of a sudden switch and all of a sudden offer a German Riesling, I think says something more about integrity and doing something that means something, that makes sense, because this is what the pairing is, not what I want it to be. Mm-hmm. This is what it is. I thought that was pretty special. Not only that, it was the right thing to do, in my opinion. That's what made that pairing special, was that it's like yin and yang. Those two things belong together.
And then what was working the floor that day like?
I went in at like 11 or 12 and all my bosses were like, wow, you're here so early. I was like, bro, if I don't get these glasses polished before he shows up, like it's not a good look.
It's over for you.
It's just not going to be a good look, you know? So I was literally in the hallway for like 3 hours polishing glasses by myself. And I didn't get them all done before he showed up, but I got most of it done. So to give you the backstory on it, one of my first jobs was when he had his restaurants and they would do these kaiseki dinners. How many courses was it?
12 usually.
12 course dinners. And he would bring me in to polish glasses. And I was maybe like 10 years old.
Wow.
And there was like hundreds of
racks glasses.
And I was like maybe polishing like 3 racks a night. Like I just was not super. I mean, what 10-year-old kid wants to sit in the kitchen and
polish glassware,
yeah. You know? So every time he sees me, or like he'll call me and be like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm polishing glasses right now. And he's like, good. And then when we're working service, he kept coming around to me and be like, what do I need to do? I was like, just stay out on the floor and work. We'll worry about getting the wines to the table. So just watching him work the floor like that, and I'll bring out the wine and I'll make it happen.
Did you feel like you could easily just talk about all those wines and, you know,
she was sitting down with tables.
I was like the bear at the state park. The bear just goes to the picnic table and sits there with them. And then like trying to shoo the bear away. That was me. I was Yogi Bear. And that's what that night also was about. Cully had created these stories. And so I just wanted to walk around and make sure that those stories were told from as many different perspectives and as succinctly as possible, rather than going on and on. All of these wineries were family owned and operated. Not that that is a big thing, but it is a big thing to me. It's just something personal, something from a family's heritage, a family's culture. So I think that's huge. Second of all, indigenous. So he chose wines that were specifically from the area, indigenous, but also there are heirloom heritage vines, not all the scientifically propagated vines, and they're farmed sustainably so that they become part of a living vineyard as opposed to just something that's commercially farmed, industrially farmed. The very fact that he was there early cleaning glassware, and the very fact that they were all at the right temperature, the very fact that he set up me so I could just walk around and act like a diva, the wine diva, he did all these things. I think that's also sets a tone operationally. I was telling my wife when I got home, I was like, oh my God, this kid, man. Oh my God, look who he's become. I think that's important today, more so than ever.
He's very much about teaching about fundamentals. And for a sommelier, one of the fundamentals is working the floor. The other two fundamentals, I mean, among many, are clean glassware and serving wine at the right temperature. Like if we can't provide that, then what are we really doing in our job?
It must be so rewarding to hear your son pair it back to you, all the things that you're trying to instill.
Yeah, I know. Where did it come from? I was like, wow, you know, the very fact that he's, every time I talk to him, he's polishing glasses for the night service. I think that's so unreal.
I think it came from you, probably.
And like my staff will be like, what are you doing? I was like, bro, you don't understand. If there's dirty glasses in here, I mean, it's just for one, it kills me to look at a dirty glass on a shelf, but like also just knowing, I mean, we're going to either have to polish it during service, which will jam us up, or, or serve it dirty, which is not going to happen.
When did each of you know that you wanted to be a sommelier?
So I worked as a server to put myself through college, and I always seemed to get promoted to restaurant management. So eventually I managed restaurants like Bagwell's 24 at the Hyatt, La Mer restaurant, the Halekulani. I was a wine cellar master at the old Kahala Hilton for all these years. So I wore tuxedo for 6.5 years. You know, it's that level of restaurant. And then the top honor is Master Sommelier. So you had to go to England and someone had to speak on your behalf in order for you to take the exam. So what happened is, I believe it was 1986, but I could be wrong. I'm not good at dates. But they had the Master Sommelier exam outside of England for the first time ever. Mm. And it was at the Monterey Wine Festival in California. It was sponsored by the National Restaurant Association. So it was a big to-do for the country. It was big. And that was the only year that was by invitation only. And I believe it was 16 Americans were invited. I happened to be one of 16. So, you know, and my best friend and I went there and we took the exam with very little preparation time. So I just kind of fell into it. But understand, all those years of working in the restaurants, that's what grouted about service. Because when you're wearing a tuxedo and you're performing at that level and you're serving all the celebrities and the dignitaries of the world, I mean, where are they eating at in Paris? Where are they eating at in New York or San Francisco or whatever? They're eating at these top-notch restaurants. So that's the standard that we need to shoot for. And
to represent Hawaii. Right?
Yes, in order to have credibility, in order to have that we are doing something here in Hawaii of a certain standard, then details is what matters. Yeah. So glassware and right temperature and all these details are very important.
For me, I tried to study for my exam a lot of different times. And it wasn't until my last job at Halekulani that it really gave me structure to study. And I was just a bartender. I was super into mixology. Like I love cocktails, don't get me wrong. And I think that it's a great culture, but with wine, you're studying history and geography, and you're like traveling through time with older vintages and geology and all, and art and culture and tradition through your sense of smell, taste, and sight. It's kind of like martial arts, where like even when you get to your black belt, like there's like 10 degrees of black belt. You never stop learning, you know? Yeah. So I think that that's the intrigue for sure.
So if I can add to that, even for myself, now that I'm 70 years old, it's the same thing what he's saying. You can never catch up. You can never learn enough. So Kevin Toyama, who's the wine cellar master at the Halekulani, he's one of the best ever here in Hawaii. I mean, the guy is incredible in terms of the wine that he can make and everything. So when Kali started working there with Kevin, I had nothing to do with anything, whether he took the exams or all the tastings he was doing. That's Kali and Kevin and Randall and the rest of the team over there, you know, and I would never push my son in any direction.
On that topic of learning and continuing to learn, I feel like maybe that's a good place to bring in the podcast.
That was Kali's vision. And he was always talking to me. So I started learning things from his generation's perspective as opposed to just how I've done things for 45 years.
You know, we connected through that. And that was like the first
stage.
I was on the show a couple times, but I was really more so about producing it. And we had a guest host. Her name's Ariana Tsuchiya. She's the beverage director for like High Steakhouse and Kiora and LaVie. And hearing them to talk about wine, when I started studying wine and now like helping to make a wine list and stuff, I'll go back and like watch old episodes. And that was like the first glimpse at like, this is pretty cool.
So from my perspective, please understand, when I was talking about the Master Sommelier exam, in the old days, you were apprenticed with a Master Sommelier. And depending on your aptitude, that's what determined how long you would apprentice. And when he, back then was only he, when he felt you were ready, then he spoke on your behalf and you were allowed to take the examination. So that step, that stage of development oftentimes gets lost in today's world. It's all about business. It's all about moving up, making money, et cetera. Not patience and learning the craft like a Grom, as Ariane used to say, like a Grom surfer, a Grom sommelier.
She calls herself the Grom Som.
That's
so
awesome.
That's the point. And so I think that this opportunity of an Uncorked created that between he and Ariana, who are the same age, and then we, both them and myself, learn from that collaboration. So by having two separate generations coming with open arms and learning together, that's when magic can happen. Yeah. That's what that podcast created for me.
When you think about someone following in their father's footsteps, there's a chance of remaining in his shadow. What do you think about in how to follow in your father's footsteps in some ways while making a name for yourself?
For sure. And this is something that I've been asked really my whole life. You know, like he's a very prominent person and I'm proud of that. And I'm trying to learn as much as I can from him while making it my own. You know, like I think just him working the floor at me and doing these dinners, instead of fixating on that too much, it's like leaning into it and be like, I mean, this is my dad. What am I supposed to do really? And just trying to be the best sommelier that I can be. Like, I don't know if I'll ever take the Master Sommelier exam, for example, but to me, while I'm doing this role right now, like I'm just trying to focus on doing it the best that I can. And that goes back to the glassware thing. That goes back to showing up early and making sure that I'm showing the staff that I'm here to polish too. Yeah, I'm not just asking you guys to do something that I would never do. So just trying to be the best leader and the best sommelier that I can be.
The thing that's I find so rewarding is the fact that it's like his sister, our daughter, right? Whitney. So she danced for Miss Aloha Hula a few years back. And she, I believe, was one of the favorites that year, I would say. And she came to me one time, we were talking, and I think she was worried about whether she's going to win or not. So my whole thing was, well, if you're going there to win, then you're probably going there for the wrong reason. And from my perspective, you have the ability to show the world your aloha, your way. And what more can you ask than that? Enjoy the journey. Spend the time enjoying your journey rather than dwelling on whether you're going to win or not. Same thing with the Master Sommelier exam. He needs to decide. And I don't know if everybody should go through the Master Sommelier program to keep learning. And what I think working the floor is at least equally as important. And so that's the whole point is you try the best that you can and you do it really not half-assed. You go all the way. And so then after that, you enjoy the journey. And so to me, it's always been a challenge, whether it's Whitney, Kali, whoever, that you live in the shadow of somebody. And then on the other side, my ex-wife's family side, His grandfather was Buzz from Buzz's Steakhouse. There's a legendary Hall of Fame restaurateur. So he, on both sides of the hill mountain, he's got two famous upper ancestors or whatever you want to call it. And to live up to that, how can you? And it's there. You know, you have to learn to deal with it. And he's been able to find his own ground based upon his old time. And he's trying to work at it now more than ever with the focus and the and making sure the completeness. Now, the rest of my story to him, enjoy the journey.
Could you each say one thing that you respect about the other that gives you pride to call him your father, to call him your son?
He's like the ultimate example of integrity. It's never about money. It's never about anything else rather than doing what's right to the best that he's able to do it. And I think that that's something that he tries to pass on to everybody that he works with. He'll give people his time and just really trying to focus on what's right.
So that guy, Jean-Louis Schaff, he showed respect and homage to all the 14, 16 generations before him. And he does it to the best as he can, but he still does it from him. That's what I look at Kali. Kali, especially with this dinner and understanding what it took to do this, to watch him understand the food and why he did all the pairings. I didn't. I just showed up for him to do things, to watch him mature in the way he thinks and what he does and the methodology and understands and embraces the severity or the homage of it all. That is to watch your child. It's like watching Whitney dance hula and she goes somewhere else. To witness that as a parent, oh my God.
That was Chuck and Kali Furuya talking with HPR's Maddie Bender. The father-son team will be reprising their collaboration this December for a champagne tasting. Bring out the bubbly. We will have links to more information on our website after the show. That does it for today's Ohana-themed Hanaho Show. Got some feedback to share with us? Call our talkback line. Here's that number, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Our program is produced by Russell Subiono, Lillian Song, and Maddie Bender, with support from Savannah Harriman-Pote and Tori DeJournay. The Backyard Quiz theme, written for us by John DeMello. Theme music, courtesy of Gypsy 808. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday. Pick up the conversation.